keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville, a little bit past the 5 o'clock hour, and I'm glad it didn't rain all day. It rained pretty good clip the times that it did rain, and you think we've had enough yet?
We'll see.
Because it rained pretty good. I don't know about. Didn't you get some lots of rain yesterday?
Not really.
Really?
Not really.
It might have been overnight. I think it
was. It'll come overnight.
Yeah. It was overnight. Night before last. It rained pretty good. let's see. Here's how we look, though. The forecast has changed dramatically since over the weekend through this week. We have just a slight chance for afternoon showers as you're on your way. Getting off from work and on your way to wherever you're going. Today's high is 87, which is exactly where we sit right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's humid for sure, but not as humid as it can be or will be in the month of July and August. And, you know, come man, this month is up. It is up.
Yep.
There's less than a week left.
That's correct.
Man,
July.
Holy cow. It seemed like we just sat down and it was
next
February.
Next weekend will be the 4th of July.
That is so crazy.
And no one has even mentioned the 4th of July. that's how things are going. Next weekend is the 4th of July and no one has mentioned
it. No, they mentioned it, but they sure have been fine by firing up their fireworks.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they know. Well, the tents are up around the edges of Davidson County. All the places that are on the other side of the county. And if you listen carefully, you can hear them.
Yeah.
And, you know, every night, you know, you hear them. I know I do. Tomorrow we have some sunshine and 89. It's warming back up, see. So I think by the 4th of July, it might be really hot. Tomorrow night's low is 67. So we're looking... you know, this is about seasonal stuff here. We're easing in and around the upper 80s and 90s this week. So back on Friday, chance of rain is back in there for you. But it's going to feel, you know, like 90 and hot and humid. And you're going to really be like, whew, let me get in some air. As quick as possible. It's going to be hard, you know, for so many people. And, you know, have you noticed, because I know you wear, you and your family, you all are smart. And you all wear your mask. And, but they are, can be warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do.
Yeah.
And the different levels, the different fabrics. And some of them are easier to breathe in than others. But is it, have you found it's just warmer, a little warmer, the warmer it's gotten outside?
It depends on what I'm doing.
Yeah, like,
it just depends. If I'm out walking, if I'm walking in public, if it's a warm place, then yes. It just varies.
Yeah. And I think when the humidity's up too.
Yeah.
Because that changes everything.
You're breathing in your own warm air from your nostrils.
Like, Lord. And, you know, the pandemic poundage, everybody has just picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
We really have. Every person.
Yeah.
And if you haven't gained a pandemic pound, good for you. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
But everybody I see.
I've tried exercising. I try to get out at least once a week to go walking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Good for you. At least once a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you've been eating healthy too, right?
Off and on. I mean, not as much. It just depends. I believe if I can get the exercise going, if I can get it done, since no one knows how long this is going to last like this.
No, we don't.
Then while it's warm, I'm trying to get as much exercise in, because I'm not going back to Planet Fitness or some of these other places right now.
Yeah.
So I go to the open tracks and walk and things like that to get some cardio.
So you can breathe some fresh air.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Once the temperature gets chilly again, if it gets cold enough where you can't really go outside
that's
going
to be a while.
It's going to be difficult, yeah.
That's going to be a while. At this rate, we're going to have extra pandemic poundage.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully that helps. And you know, if nothing else, it also should be relaxing, you know, for you personally, too. Because I know in my neighborhood, I've seen a lot more people walking. And knowing that that's the case, I'd be like, I never seen you before. Yeah, my neighbors, you know.
Yeah.
And they're out, you know, doing the same thing. And so I think there's a lot more walkers now, bike riders. Haven't you seen a lot of bike riders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had a bike trail, I'd probably go. I hadn't ridden a bike in years, but that's also a great way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Riding bikes.
And just, you know, y'all watch where you're going, though, please. And don't just walk across the street or in front of traffic and not look. definitely not look. The statue situation. I know in my mind what I'd like to see, and I think a lot of people have their thoughts. I think this discussion needs to be had, you know, and the recognition that if we're all created equal, there's not an equal distribution of these things, number one. And there has not the education and the textbooks and curricula that are used in the public school system. It seems to be at the center of some. It could be helpful if, and they can't cover everything, but you know, because there's so many things that have happened in history in terms of pivotal moments, seminal moments, that I don't know if a textbook could cover everything, but at least, you know, be more honest and, of course, grade and age appropriate. But Black History Month is once a year. But it's to a certain degree. What about speakers and presenters and educational displays and, you know, what about things of that nature as you're able to help your students understand? Because for them, this is going to be a whole, they have thoughts and feelings. You know, they're experiencing a lot.
Yeah.
You remember when you were growing up, and I know I do because it was during that turbulent time in our country. And, you know, my parents made us sit down and watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we would know what was going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, in the dinner table, we'd have our little discussions.
Yeah, talk about it.
Sure. But it did help to give me a well-shaped, better thought process, you know, because all of us, my sisters and my brother and I was four children and two parents, and we all sat together at the same table, and we're Black. Amazing. we ate dinner at the same time together every night. Normal stuff. It's just, you know, hearing everybody else's thoughts, and then you yourself seeing all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, you know, Dr. King and being his speeches and his rallies and all the things that, you know, were taking place, and Medgar Evers and Malcolm X and all these things, these pivotal points that we have gone through in our lives. What kind of pivotal points do you remember from your growing up that helped shape some of your thought process for today? Were there points in civil rights that...
Oh, yeah. When I was about 16, when we were in Athens, Georgia, we came together with other churches and mm-hmm. other organizations to march on Forsyth County, which was in 1986 or 87. Mm-hmm. And I remember just luckily being able to stand right behind Coretta Scott King, Andrew Young, and Hosea Williams. And I was up front watching him give that speech. And as we marched into Forsyth County, the state troopers, or the National Guard rather, mm-hmm. had a path. We had to walk down the middle of the street, and they had the they were on both sides of the street mm-hmm. so that the people, the residents there, could not get to us. And then on top of the buildings, the people's houses, were people holding up signs right. in Word Go Home and things of that nature, yeah. and helicopters flying all over the place. So that was one of the first things that I was involved in terms of.
How old were you?
But, at that time, I was about 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you had an opinion by that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, those points, and it took all that to get us to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And we truly are at a spot that is so important and so crucial. And for people to not recognize that we're at a very pivotal point in our culture, our society, and our world, and then just poo-poo it away like it's nothing, you know, is a disgrace to me. Knowing that this nation's history is what it is. I don't think that the statues need to be thrown in the river or decapitated. I just put them up in another place.
Museum.
Yeah, just,
and that's where they belong.
Warehouse and just sell tickets to get museum. In. I mean, just get them out of our faces. And that stuff was used in so many ways to keep people down here and all over the country that, you know, it just makes you feel some kind of way. But I assure you that all over the country, they people have been, it didn't just start trying to get these statues down. They've been trying to do this for years and years and years.
Yeah.
They're trying to get these things removed.
That's true. But, you know, to the people who keep defending things like the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue, I'm on Wikipedia, and it says here about the design of that statue. The monument was designed by Jack Kershaw, a Vanderbilt University alum, co-founder of the League of the South, a white nationalist and white supremacist organization, and a former lawyer to James Earl Ray. And it says, in the face of public criticism, the installation, Kershaw defended the statue by saying, somebody needs to say a good word for slavery. And that's the statue that's out there now.
Well,
that everybody
and
is
the
defending.
And the stuff gets worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the money over there.
Yeah.
That's not poor folks. That,
and that's what they're defending. They're defending. That's their heritage. That's when people say, that's my heritage. That's what you want people to know.
About your heritage.
About your heritage. That
but we want people to know about our heritage.
Yeah.
And what we stood for and still do and not in a derogatory manner.
Yeah. So when I look at people like the governor and other leaderships of this state who just say nothing. And then I see him on TV last night with a protester saying, we want to speak with you. And he says, well, there's a lot of people who want to speak with
me. He's not going to do that.
You know what they want.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah, he's not going to do it.
No.
He's not going to do it.
He's absolutely not going to do it.
No, he's not even thinking about
them. They can sit out there until
to the end of his term.
Or until the moon turns to cheese, but he is not.
Yeah, he's not.
Is not.
He is one who operates as though he is not accountable for anything himself.
No, but what that would signal is he surrendered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is not happening. Yeah. Yeah. That is simply
But it also
not
shows
happening.
His character. Because, again, with all the change taking place around the country, where is the courage or leadership that says, okay, here in the state of Tennessee, there ought to be some changes made as to how people view this state? And so...
Well, they're looking at the dollars coming in from the tourists. That's how they're viewing it. They're not viewing it like everybody else, because there's people who come here just for those kind of statues and things, because they love all that stuff.
Put it in a museum.
They come here for that.
Put it in a museum and charge them to get in.
And
there
that,
you go.
And that is, you know, at the bottom line, at the end of the day, if it's not making dollars, it's not making sense. So, and those folks, you know, it's not like they're wealthy and, you know, millionaires out there. Those are grassroots activists, and they're serious about their mission. He's not going to come outside and talk to them.
That
stuff ain't going to work, honey. No. And, you know, it's a good, valiant effort, and I understand it. And he's only going to deal with this up to a certain point before he gets the pressure.
Yeah, to have him removed.
My question is, from the statement that he gave during that press conference, was he said he's going to talk to people who have talked to the people.
Just talk to the people.
you know how it goes now. Who's the people that you would be extracting the information from? If it's people like Senator Tim Scott, then you're not going to hear the deal. You're not going to hear
Well, Governor,
the whole truth.
I agree with what you're saying. I think that you have a point there.
Well, I've been, like you said, I've been stopped seven times, and I don't see no problem with it. And I do me being black.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so hopefully, and I know there's some, you know, Senator Gilmore and Representative Love and the other representatives from Shelby County and Memphis, Shelby County area, and, you know, Johnny Shaw and them.
Mm-hmm.
Down, I mean, you know.
But it represents hate, period.
One of the things that, you know, they're the ones that are going to have to be the buffer, because he's not going to come.
Yeah.
If he doesn't hear from regular folk, if he only hears from people that make way over a couple $100,000.
Where's his pastor?
He's
going to
hear.
This?
Who knows?
Where does he go to church?
He's going to hear something entirely different.
Of course.
Because that level of, you know.
The gospel?
No, I'm just saying
that
because people who
reach,
are so far removed from, you
that
know.
That kind of stuff, yeah.
Good and hood. I mean, they don't know. I mean, come on.
They're
you know,
to
they
destroy
they don't
our
know.
Heritage.
Yeah, well, I'm
that's because that's what we heard the president say. They're trying to destroy our heritage, remove our heritage. What heritage are you referring to?
Well, he's referring to
I just read it though.
Of the
oppression
civil
and slavery.
War, right.
Oppression and slavery, which belongs in a museum.
Well, I hope that when they do come out and talk to the community and whoever the governor's committee of whoever he's going to have, if he's actually going to do it, or is he just
of course not
saying that he will get people.
I could think of five people right now he could talk to.
Well, I mean,
I'm looking at one right now.
Hundreds. Don't you know, you asked me my opinion, he won't return my the calls for to be on this show. So anyway, my point is that I hope that there's some regular citizens that get to say some stuff to him. And, you know, I'm not saying because black folks some haven't had money that they're not going to speak it. But I just feel that they won't really tell it like a T.I. is. Then you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. So, you know.
They're going to dance.
And, you know, when we kill these mics, you know, I'm going to say something different, too. Anyway, we're coming back here in a second with... I mean, especially if you just look at this Senator Scott,
man. Gonna tap
I mean, that
dance.
Dude is like what is
dance.
This? This is your chance to tell
They're
it.
You're going to find a Ben Carson.
But he was not going to do it.
Or Clarence Thomas.
That's it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You know, just, oh, it's not that bad. Coming up in just a second, Dr. Tiffany Janna. She discusses how to identify and stop microaggressions. You're like, what the heck? That's the new word everybody's using. That's the new term everybody's referring to. But she's going to explain her new book. Not everyone, she says, understands what they are or how to recognize them and stop them from happening. While overt racism, sexism, and all other forms of discrimination are relatively easy to spot, we cannot neglect the subtler everyday actions that normalize exclusion. Now, let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. It's busy here on the South Loop, the West Loop, wrapping up that crash there in West Nashville, 6500 block of Upton Lane. Traffic still moving right along on 24 through that construction zone, especially eastbound as you head out towards Murfreesboro there on 24 passing Bell Road. This traffic report is brought to you by Adventures Unlimited on the Ocoee River, that website, adventuresunlimited.net. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Tune in on Thursdays to hear WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's WFSK Artist of the Week is trumpeter, arranger, and founding member of Earth, Wind, and Fire, Leslie Drayton. His latest release is entitled Changing Landscapes. Don't miss the WFSK Feature Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And I always love to have the fresh new books, and the subject is not new to this broadcast and to many of the advocates out in the community. And just another opportunity for us to put the information in the atmosphere is what it is all about. Today's book, Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop Microaggressions. And let me welcome to the broadcast today Dr. Tiffany Janna. And maybe some of you that do read and keep up may be familiar with some of the other books that she's co-authored, Overcoming Bias and the second edition of the B Corp Handbook. And Dr. Tiffany Janna, how are you today?
I am doing as well as one can do in Richmond, Virginia during the biggest civil rights movement in the world's history.
Truly, 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 it is the global reverberation we have going.
It is.
Yeah, and since it's more than the United States coming wide awake to things, I say that it is something is time for change or past time. Now, are you born and raised Richmond?
No, but I have been here for 26 years, which means that all three of my children, from the person turning 13 on Friday to the senior in college who graduated a few weeks ago, were all born and raised in Richmond. So it is now home.
You don't have a southern accent?
No, because I'm an Army brat, so I lived all over, including overseas, and I speak three languages, so I have a very generalized accent.
Oh, yeah, you do. You truly do. I know Richmond is a beautiful place. I do know some years back I got the joy of being taken to a special tribute to honor Dr. Lonnie Liston Smith. And giving him a jazz award and everything. And it was just really lovely. And I had a good weekend. And I didn't, you know, encounter some of the issues that you all have. Because I was just there for the event and to see the... But the folks were very warm that I encountered. The people were very nice and they respected him greatly. Does he still live there?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure.
Okay. As a jazz legend that he is. Now, Dr. Jana, you have been quite the speaker and the author on diversity and inclusion for a while now. Tell us, what is TMI Consulting?
TMI Consulting is a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy consulting firm. That has been around since 2003 that mm-hmm. I founded. And what we do is we help organizations, institutions, and even communities really calibrate their culture towards inclusion. So we're centering the Black experience, we're centering the underrepresented experience, and making sure that everyone is able to have equitable opportunities mm-hmm. to be happy, to be joyful, and to be successful in all of their endeavors.
Oh, that's wonderful. That certainly sounds good. Is that heaven?
I love it. I love it, and I come to it by way of family business. We've been freedom fighters of one form or another from the earliest days of enslavement in my family. Men and women both have worked in service of the liberation of our people, and our people also happens to include all of humankind. We're a very inclusive bunch, so when we liberate Black bodies, we also create liberation in the hearts of the oppressor. So we really take this work very seriously and love it very
beautiful.
Much.
Beautiful. Well, strengthened, I ask that you get strengthened to do it, because it's a lot to get people to come up off of hundreds of years of entrenched history. It's hard. It's really difficult. So you hang in there, sister, for sure.
I'm powered by God. Yes. So this is not a job. This is a calling. This is a vocation. This is a ministry. And the long and short of it is that I'm peddling love.
Yeah.
So I have a very deep and abiding respect and affection for myself, for my family, and I extend that out to the rest of the world. And that is what rings true and rings throughout all of my messaging is, love for all of humankind, and that comes directly from source.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, tell me about the co-author, Michael Barron.
Michael Barron is a professor who has worked at Harvard University, and he works currently at InQuest Consulting. Mm-hmm. But he's a gentleman who is a many, many years, decades-long practitioner in this space. He's of Jewish descent, and we actually met at one of the industry conferences, the biggest industry conference in the world for our inclusion work, mm-hmm. And we really hit it off. So I really enjoy working with first-time authors because I have a very easy time of writing because, mm-hmm. My inspiration comes from source, so it all gets to the page quickly. He really wanted to write a book but wasn't really keen on the whole process, mm-hmm. so we collaborated because we both felt the same about this idea of microaggressions mm-hmm. and how off-putting just the word is. So we wanted to rebrand microaggressions mm-hmm. to something more values-neutral and just descriptive.
Yeah.
So subtle acts of exclusion is just a description mm-hmm. of the phenomenon that puts a little bit less blame on people.
yeah. Now, the term microaggressions, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of just of recent last year or so, people have been throwing that around mm-hmm. in academia. And, you know, you sitting there saying, okay, that's the new word, buzzword. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? It sounds, and you break down the meaning in the very beginning of your book. So tell our audience, what are microaggressions?
Yeah, so microaggressions are those subtle, often unintentional acts or words that people initiate that, you know, even through a good intent, actually cause harm, actually push people out to the margins. Mm-hmm. So, you know, SAEs for short, subtle acts of exclusion, SAEs, microaggressions, can come in the form of an actual compliment. And those of us who are Black folks know one of our most annoying ones that we receive is how incredibly articulate we are, right?
Right.
White people call us articulate. They think they're paying us a compliment right. when in fact what they're doing is revealing their unconscious bias that based on how we look, they were not expecting us to be able to communicate.
Oh, in other words, y'all can read?
Yes.
Now, what was so, as a teachable situation, because my audience is diverse, what should they change that thought to instead of telling someone they're articulate and they're a person of color? What should they be saying?
Well, so, you know, instead of focusing on that particular example, all work related to inclusion and creating space for humans to feel like they belong and can thrive, the work has to start with you. You've got to do the deeper work of mm-hmm. identifying where your unconscious biases are, because mm-hmm. you're likely to demonstrate them and act them out on people without being aware of them. Mm. So you've got to do some introspective work to figure out, you know, like right now in this BLM moment, we are finding that, you know, people are having to really do the work of understanding our racial history, mm-hmm. our racist history, and people are having to do the work of understanding how they've been holding up these mm-hmm. systems and structures and how these biases are affecting them and how they're benefiting from racism as a whole. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that specific example, like before you say things to people, and this is all people, you need to be thinking about what you're saying.
Right.
I think we move a little bit too fast in mm-hmm. this modern world. But a lot of times people just aren't, they're not really interrogating their own, you know, their own actions, their mm-hmm. own thoughts. But it starts with a deeper piece of work that allows you to understand what are the opinions and beliefs and stereotypes that I have about people. And then you have to interrogate before you speak. What am I saying here? What am I trying to say here? Yeah. And does this even need to be said?
Right. Well, and you know, a couple of things, would you in social media, is it full of microaggressions?
Oh, indeed.
I figured that. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's so easy to hide behind a screen, to hide behind a username, to hide behind a handle and an avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also devoid of the nonverbal cues that humans have evolved to really understand. You mm-hmm. can say any words that you want, but our ability to read the subtle cues are really acute. So why do people get upset in the face of microaggressions? Well, because as you're looking at us and paying that compliment or asking that seemingly mm-hmm. Innocent question, those of us who are being excluded can feel your bias.
Mm-hmm.
We are aware of the bias about which you are blind.
Hmm.
So when social media, you don't have those cues. Mm-hmm. And so really the only thing that shows mm-hmm. is your exposed bias. And then there's, you know, there's simultaneously hiding behind screens and there's also nowhere to hide. We just see you. And it is, you know, it actually causes harm.
It does, and it also stirs up hate too. You know.
Oh yeah. I don't feed the trolls personally. Like I don't get too much of that nonsense. But when someone tries to engage, I shine so much love and light back at them, combined with a few sprinkles of intellectual accuracy.
Right.
And they leave me alone.
Oh, I'm certain. because that means I'd have to think entirely too hard.
There it is.
So now, in your speaking and in your work, it's this work. And, you know, folks, I don't know how much they really want to work on improving themselves. They've lived all this time and they've been, you know, loving the Confederate flag and the Civil War and the South's going to do it again and all that stuff. They've lived in that and they're going to die in it. So I guess in the workplace is where you start to a degree to help people to understand it's not as hard as you're making it.
Yeah, and see, the interesting thing, the reason I choose the workplace, I love the workplace, mm-hmm. is because I believe that the workplace is the biggest learning laboratory that we have outside of structured education.
Mm.
And most of us are not using that laboratory as efficiently and usefully as we could. So providing people with the skills and tools required to help people really increase their cultural fluency, mm-hmm. and create a system of belonging and welcoming, it's not rocket science. You can literally teach these people things. So in the workplace, an employer has absolutely no right to tinker with people's thoughts and beliefs. It's none of your employer's business. What you think and believe is on you.
Mm-hmm.
But what an employer has is they have an obligation to dictate acceptable and unacceptable behaviors. And when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and justice,
mm-hmm.
behaviors are easy to measure, are easy to calibrate, mm-hmm. are easy to hold people accountable for, as long as you're willing to name the issue, name the problem, center the experience of the people who are not having a good experience, and then hold people accountable. So I believe that the workplace is a phenomenal opportunity, mm-hmm. To make some change, because yeah, there's a bunch of people on this planet right now who ain't got no time for anybody black, anybody gay, yeah. anybody different, anybody foreign, and they're probably going to die holding those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other people, you know, who, you know, we can actually begin, and I've watched it. I've watched so many people's hearts and minds expand,
mm-hmm.
as they are forced to exist in proximity to real human beings, mm-hmm. not abstractions, not cultural abstractions,
right.
but real human beings. And then given the opportunity to learn how to communicate and access new information,
right.
about people that they just didn't know that they didn't know.
Right.
So ignorance can be combated, but we've got to leverage the power of this workplace environment that we have in order to see that individual change, which ultimately can lead to systemic change if we're willing to implement structural changes.
Well, and you know, I think as what you just described and the workplace being what it is, it seems to me like the community of faith would be good as that as well, because we are supposed to study and get the characteristics of Jesus and all that,
mm-hmm.
and that certainly does change behavior if you decide to implement it in your life and put the application on and do it. So that's kind of the same kind of it would seem like that would be a good place too. Is that am I thinking right or wrong?
I mean, it's not about right or wrong. It's just really challenging because our church history is fraught with its own racism challenges, girl. So there are countless churches across the country and, mm-hmm. and a high concentration of them across the South that are, you know, that are Bible believing and Christian, who actively and aggressively maintain racist beliefs, mm-hmm. and support racist policies, systems, structures, politicians, etc. So it's not, you know, yes, in a perfect world, all things being equal, that could be great,
mm-hmm.
but we can never forget that white people used the Bible to justify the enslavement
yes,
of our
ma'am.
Black bodies.
Absolutely did, and still continue.
There it is.
To this day. And
there it is.
So the more y'all read, the more you read and study, the smarter and better off you're going to be. I won't say articulate. I just say the better off you're going to be, and the better off one shall be. Anyway, Dr. Tiffany Janna is my guest this hour. She's consultant, international speaker, and author. We're taking the time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay?
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. It's busy here on the South Loop, the West Loop. There's been a crash in that construction zone, 440 westbound near Murphy Road. Moving that crash to the side, 65 northbound at Vietnam Vets as you head up through that part of Goodlettsville. Just busy, what you would expect right now on all the major outbound routes. This traffic report is brought to you by Adventures Unlimited on the Ocoee River. That website, adventuresunlimited.net. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Next time on Jazz Night in America, NEA Jazz Master Dee Dee Bridgewater on what it means to take on the music of Abby Lincoln and Nina Simone.
I saw Nina Simone the first time on the Ed Sullivan Show, and she came out and she had a dress on made out of African fabric, and she had her hair natural, but it was fixed like an African queen, and she was barefoot, and I was like, who is that?
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Hey, Mike, I usually run into your wife, Susan, here at the supermarket.
Susan had to find a part-time job ever since we retired. It's getting harder to make ends meet.
Have you heard about BenefitsCheckup.org?
BenefitsCheckup.org?
BenefitsCheckup.org is a free website where people over 60 can see if they qualify for help to pay for food, medicine, even utilities. BenefitsCheckup.org helped me get $1,200 a year in benefits. Maybe it can help you.
Hi, I'm your host, Smokey Colbert. Filling in for Smokey, because after 75 years of...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Turns out there's much more to say. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless, dumping our used barbecue coals willy-nilly. Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. That's why I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous or new car scented. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, Tenashville. Sharon Kay in the house, Marty. Glad to be with you on this Wednesday, taking you home this afternoon. Hopefully that you will arrive in one piece and in a good attitude when you get there. Now, just a 30-second disclaimer on my show that has been on the air for a long time. You all know this is an empowerment, encouragement show. That's the emphasis. So while you're in the car, in the traffic, you can start on your training then, see. You can get to working on your head. So at least you can open yourself up to the possibility of saying, well, maybe I do need to change, or maybe I could do something that to enlighten or empower myself or my family. Because that's who your family is looking at, is you, and to the grown folks out there. So, you know, we hope that as the various guests come to share their knowledge on these topics, that many of you will begin the transformation process and move yourself forward. And don't fight and struggle like you do about wearing a mask. But let's get busy on this. And Dr. Tiffany Janna is with us today to help move things along. And some of the subject matter, I love her presentation so far. So knowing that that's the case, because it's precise. And knowing that that's the case, her new co-authored book is The Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop Microaggressions. And Dr. Tipton, I just want to make this observation, and then I want your opinion. You know, on a lot of things that, you know, we people consume in terms of mainstream media, they always say, but we need to have these conversations, and we need to, but you know, folk like me and you and others out here, we're having them. And we have been having them, because you didn't just start in this work last week. You've been doing this for a while, right?
That's right.
So, you know, what I try to encourage people to do is open up your horizons. You know, tune in to Fisk University or listen to jazz, you know. Become aware. And you know, multiple sourcing. But this topic is one that will be discussed greatly in the coming days and in the future. When you include or ask to do a presentation, and let me go back to the church setting versus the workplace setting. In preparation of either one of those, because I see they could use your book too as a tool in both places, how would you prepare as the trainer to help get the people frame of mind in the right place?
Yeah, so I don't personally train anymore. That is, you know, 20 plus years ago when I first started, I did start in the training room. But, you know, we train up other consultants in our methodology. And what we look for in the, you know, what we look for in the trainers is we look for that alignment of mind and heart and spirit. The very best trainers in this space, you know, very often are people of color, are African-American people, but sometimes you even find really great white folks who mm-hmm. have done the work, the mm-hmm. deep personal work, and they can be great role models for mm-hmm. other white folks trying mm-hmm. to move forward in this space.
Right.
But it comes with a very necessary open heart. It comes with a great deal of intellectual capacity, mm-hmm. and it comes with the ability to listen to where people are mm-hmm. and guide them gently through their own evolution. Mm-hmm. Because if people are waking up to things like their own unconscious bias mm-hmm. or reckoning with their own racist behaviors mm-hmm. for often the first time in their lives, mm-hmm. that can be a really, really emotional and challenging thing. So we've got to have, you know, folks with high emotional intelligence who have had hundreds and hundreds of conversations in this race space and in these inclusion spaces over time, mm-hmm. because it is a skill. Cultural fluency is a muscle that you've got to work out, that you've got to exercise, that you've got to feed. And this is why I'm excited about this moment that we're in, mm-hmm. because by having all of these allies who are literally standing on the front lines with us across the world, mm-hmm. we have this critical mass and we have this moment. I mean, if somebody had told you that every major corporation in America and around the world was suddenly going to put a statement out talking about Black Lives Matter and denouncing the public lynching of black men, none of us would have believed was coming. We just wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
And so now we're at a point where with the, you know, we have always been powerful as a people, but now we're at a point where through this collective power and the notion of public accountability,
yes.
people are putting out these statements in order to demonstrate, wait, not us, we're not racist.
Right.
And we're going to demand the action and the follow-up accountability mm-hmm. that comes with it.
Absolutely.
So I don't think people were ready
right.
for what they unleashed when they made these statements, but I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
And I'm even more happy for the organizations that had already embarked on their diversity journey.
Right.
But now you've got these new folks who are finally, you know, I mean, people fired their whole diversity staff because of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn around and they're like, oops,
yeah.
Maybe that wasn't such a good idea.
Right, right. No kidding. And having said that, I guess I think this is chapter 2, you are in the book, page 38. Do you have your book there?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
You say, think before you speak. And I guess in a way, some of these folks better be able to back up what they're saying, huh? Is that
that is exactly the thrust of it, because, you know, even from the smallest action, like the, you know, well-meaning white person who texts a black colleague who they happen to know because they work with each other to say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you know, I can't believe this is happening. You know, think before you text. Are you writing to me right now to prove that you aren't a racist, or do we actually have the relationship equity? In which case, shouldn't I already know that you're not a racist? Mm-hmm. Why you got to prove something to me? Like, do people need to think about their motivation before they even reach out and make that communication? Again, intentions will only get you but so far. Right now, the emotional tax that is being levied on black people in the workplace, the APR on that bad boy has gone through the roof.
Yes,
so people need to be thinking about how they're interacting with black people in the workplace right now, because ain't nobody got energy for educating you. It is not our job to educate you. There are people like me and companies like mine who are here to provide that service.
Exactly.
So expecting us to personally educate you, and expecting, you know, any random black person in your organization to suddenly lead your diversity initiative. No, you got to do this the right way. And,
exactly.
If somebody does volunteer and you do want them to take that on, you better pay them handsomely for the extra load.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And as I have said on this show for quite some time, you know, white America, we didn't give ourselves 401 years of treating ourselves like dogs. And then you want us to fix it. I mean, we were the people who were subjected to the abuse and the rape and lynchings and et cetera. And then we have to fix it. I mean, that to me is the craziest formula I have ever heard, because essentially that's what has been happening up to this point.
Yes.
Is the struggles that have taken place over the many years and decades, the Jim Crow era and the civil rights movement. We always had to be on the battlefield, and we always had to be doing all those things in order to be able to go shopping or do anything. And they just got to coast. And I'm like, this ain't fair. this is absolutely not fair. So in your chapter 4, Institutional Action, Embedding SAE Accountability.
Yes, that's my favorite.
Okay, go ahead and tell us what that one's about.
All right, so all of my books are written from the perspective of, I am just a human being and I want to be a better person. I want to figure out how I can make a greater contribution towards a more equitable world, right? So it starts with the individual, always does. And then what my co-authors and I always do is we scaffold that up to, you know, your immediate relationships, then maybe your teams, your leadership, and then the highest level is the institutional level, the organizational level. So what do you do about SAE or microaggressions in the workplace? What you do is you embed an SAE accountability system, and what that does, and then we put, you know, step-by-step guidance on how to do that, but basically what you do is you say, okay, we're willing to accept that we are all human. And we're willing to accept that as humans, we have bias. Mm-hmm. And we're willing to accept that as humans with bias, we are going to commit SAEs. We're going to initiate SAEs from time to time, but we're not going to let that break us. What we are going to do is we're going to normalize calling each other in. We're going to make it expected and acceptable for the minute that someone is injured by someone's words or actions. The expectation in this culture is that someone will call that person in, whether privately or in front of the group, to say, hey, let's pump the brakes really quickly and talk about what just happened, because we're going to learn together. We're going to grow together. If you make that a normal course of a new kind of culture, then you cause less harm, and you don't have all kinds of underrepresented people running around having to cover themselves, you know, feeling anxiety, depression, all of the things that are causing black people to die at twice the rate of white folks from COVID are the kinds of things that if your organization were accountable for how we treated each other, we wouldn't have as much stress and we wouldn't have as much sickness.
No question about that. Now, I want to ask you in the final minutes, and I'm so glad you addressed this particular one in your book. It just really does get my nerves when people say, I don't see color and I don't see black.
Lord, I'm like, what? That
rises to the top up there with your so articulate. See color, because it's beautiful. You know, don't trash it. See it. And, you know, I'm not hiding it. I'm not going to apologize for being black anymore. So what are you saying in your book? Because in particular, I have in this chapter, Race and Ethnicity, on page 101, you have an example. I don't even see you as black.
Ooh. Oh, gosh.
Come on, talk about it, baby.
Well, I mean, so the first thing I want to say, I always use this colorblind thing as an excuse to remind parents, particularly white parents, that training your children to be colorblind or pretending that you don't see color, you are literally training up a little baby racist. Right. So you need to be cognizant about having conversations about race. You have age-appropriate conversations about race. I started a YouTube playlist on my channel that is, you know, I'm reading inclusive stories to mm-hmm. children to help you figure out how to have that conversation, because you must. If you have colorblind kids, you're going to have racist teenagers. So I don't even see you as black is, you know, again, couched as a compliment. So people have said that, you know, not as much anymore, but mm-hmm. throughout my young adult life, and certainly through mm-hmm. my upbringing, what white people were trying to say was, well, no, I think of you as being one of us. I think of you as being just like me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're smart and you're articulate, and you know, we have things in common. We both play tennis, we both ski, we speak multiple languages. And by not seeing me as black, what mm-hmm. you're doing is you're minimizing
right.
my one of my primary identities.
Right.
And you're telling me that what I don't do is I don't conform to your stereotype of what black is.
Right.
And the more I am like you, the less I am black, which means that you have just kind of ubiquitously painted this broad brush of blackness
right.
that is everything you are not.
Right.
And most people consider themselves to be good people, so you're really making a really heavy-handed value judgment
yes.
just by saying that you don't see me as black. And this is the thing. Is it conscious? Do people
yeah.
realize they're doing it? Of course not.
Yeah.
You've got to do the introspective work of figuring out how this racism thing works, how do these constructs work, and how they have infected your mind.
If they didn't see you as black, they wouldn't be able to say you're black. I mean, that one is so obvious. And I mean, it's like, you know, to me, because I do hear that, and I from time to time hear black people defending white people. Well, they don't even say, I'm like, you know what, you do not need to be an enabler. Because, you know, that one really does get to me. And do you think it's sort of a quasi-disrespect of our culture?
Yeah, because just like you're so articulate is really saying, the subtext on that is, I don't expect people who look like you to know how to speak,
mm-hmm.
right? What you're saying when you say, well, I don't think of you as black is, well, you don't conform to my stereotype of blackness.
Right.
I expect you to speak, you know, in a particular way. Mm-hmm. I expect you to perform at a particular level. Whatever your stereotype is, I don't know what it is, but it's not me. And for you to remove my blackness because I fit outside of that stereotype, and you're telling me that it's in a favorable mm-hmm. way, you're saying, oh, it's so good mm-hmm. that you don't conform to my stereotype of blackness. Oh, my gosh, how insulting.
Truly. And as I wrap, I just want to say to the black people, when you hear it, you know, oh, that's okay. No, it's not.
I mean, no, just, it's not okay.
Yeah, just, you know, I just, because sometimes I think we allow that stuff to just, you know, perpetuate by not saying, you know, or at least asking the question. I wish I had more time. because, you know, I can tell that, you know, you get it, you got it, and I'm glad.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a delightful conversation with my sister. I really appreciate you.
Oh, most definitely. And tell our audience how to follow you, you know, in all the social and online and all that.
Yeah, so I'm Tiffany Janna, that's TiffanyJanna, on pretty much all social media. So I'm very, very active on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
and definitely follow my YouTube channel. There's a lot of good information there as well. My company is TMI Consulting,
okay.
and you can find us online.
Excellent. The latest co-authored book by Dr. Janna is Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, I guess I read the sentence backwards, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop the microaggressions. Thank you so much. And I look forward to following your work, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. And it's you know, this book is really quite interesting. And I'm glad that she was able to be on with us from her home in Richmond, Virginia. Anyway, that's all. A-L-L. I like to spell. Hey, hey, hey. Because it rhymes. That's all I have for you today. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.